This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I asked my husband recently if he's interested in Gladiator 2. I think we both agree, nah, we'll pass. It seems like movies get more and more brutal now, and I certainly understand the need for authenticity and trying to make it as realistic as possible, but I'm not sure you can replicate. There are some movies that are not meant to be rebooted and do not need a sequel. I'm sure we could do an entire show on just that particular topic. We won't, but we can. So I don't think I'm into Gladiator 2. You all can let me know if it's any good, but I'm going to sit this one out. Not going to sit this one out, though, because this is not a remake. It's not a reboot. It's not a sequel. It's The Hump Show, middle show of the work week, and we're glad to have you with us after hours with Amy Lawrence. You can find us online at A-Law Radio, or if you're looking to send your questions for tonight's entertainment, well, the highlight, it always is me telling stupid stories about myself. The highlight of The Hump Show is Ask Amy Anything. And the post is up at Amy After Hours and also on our Facebook page. I remembered this week. Producer Pete was out last week. So I guess I was just out of my regular routine too. And I forgot to post on our Facebook page until I was here in the building and in the studio, which was less than helpful. So the post has been up. It's there on Facebook. You're looking for our bright orange thought bubble, easy to find, or bright orange box and yellow thought bubble, I think. We've been using that same clip art for a decade, but it works. It's notable, and you can find it really easy. So Ask Amy Anything, and that'll come up in our middle hour here. Well, one of the middle hours in the middle of the show where you desperately need a little boost. So if laughing at me helps you get through this night, this show, and on closer to the weekend, I'm happy to oblige. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. The writing is on the wall for the New York Jets, so we're definitely going to get to their next big change. Woody Johnson deciding that he will pull the plug on the general manager. And of course, this sends ripple effects because most believe it's just the next domino to drop. There are likely to be other dominoes. There are likely to be other pieces that are either removed or benched or fired or usurped. Oh, such a good word. Usurped. That's our word for this edition of the show. The Hump Show will not be usurped, but others in the Jets organization might, in fact, be usurped. Did you see the reporting from The Athletic indicating that the owner of the Jets, Woody Johnson, who makes this move and lets Joe Douglas go after week 11, the reporting is that he was furious following the comeback victory by the Colts just Sunday. But it's not the first time he's been furious. After the Jets were embarrassed by the Broncos in week 4, and I'm not saying that the Broncos played terrific, only that they were embarrassed in losing at home to a Broncos team that scored 10 points. The Jets could not manage a touchdown. Aaron Rodgers was sacked 5 times in the rain. Oh my gosh, Pete, that might be the last time we had rain in New Jersey. I'm not kidding. We're supposed to get a ton of rain over the next 36 hours. I've been praying for rain, rain dance, all that jazz. I think that might have been the last weekend we had rain because that was the weekend I ran my half marathon. Yep. Hasn't rained in 2 months except for the day I ran my half marathon. Of course.
So, you running tomorrow?
I've, I should, just to make sure we get rain. So that was the weekend. The weather was nasty, but come on, it's football. It's an outdoor sport. That's no excuse. The Jets had no touchdowns. He threw for 225 yards, got sacked a bunch. And according to The Athletic, Woody Johnson wanted to bench him after week four. So when I tell you, and this was something that I put out there on Twix on the weekend, we talked about it here on the show the last couple nights, kind of briefly on Sunday night into Monday. It was more about the Colts and their comeback on our Sunday night NFL show. But I did get passionate about this on our last show. I can't see one legit reason for bringing Aaron Rodgers back as the starting quarterback of the Jets. I'm not saying his career should be over. He can make that choice. If there's another team willing to pay him, fine. He says he's not ready to retire. He says that he doesn't foresee him walking away before 2025. Great. That's your prerogative. Do what you want. But what legit reason can you make, or what legit case can you make for the Jets bringing him back? There isn't one. It's been a disaster. It's time to cut your losses. Two years, one without Aaron Rodgers, but waiting for Aaron Rodgers, like the return of the king or something. And then this season, in which the offense has been a mess, and that's putting it mildly. So now Joe Douglas gets bounced. And before the first month of the season was even over, according to The Athletic, Woody Johnson wanted Aaron Rodgers to ride the pine. He apparently called a huge meeting. The big wigs in the organization, including his brother Christopher Johnson and the team president, different members of the coaching staff like Robert Saleh, who was still there, offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett, who's got the history with Aaron Rodgers, and the now interim head coach Jeff Ulbrich, they were part of the meeting. And Johnson made the suggestion, I guess it wasn't a demand or a command, but a suggestion that they should bench Aaron Rodgers. Woody Johnson, again, according to The Athletic, believed that Tyrod Taylor would give the Jets a better chance of winning. Now, I love this line. Apparently, the coaching staff thought Johnson's idea was crazy. Okay. The Jets did not bench him. This is my narrator voice. The Jets did not bench Aaron Rodgers. And now, gosh, 7 weeks later, they've won one more game, and it's gone from bad to worse. So we'll get to that. I did see that Devontae Adams was speaking on Tuesday. I know most of these guys will speak on Wednesday. We'll definitely get some reaction. But the writing is on the wall. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who remembers going back to last offseason. Not just Robert Saleh, not just Aaron Rodgers, but others echoed the sentiment that if Rodgers didn't perform, people were going to get fired. He said that. He actually said, if I don't do my job and do it well, coming off the Achilles, people are going to lose their jobs. So they all knew going into this season exactly what was on the line. So they have an interim general manager, an interim head coach, and they've certainly tabled all of those Super Bowl expectations. And are now 3-8. And remember, after Saleh got fired, what did Woody Johnson tell us? We need to find that audio, Pete. Didn't he tell us that this was the best roster he'd put together, or they'd put together, in a quarter century of him as the owner? I'm pretty sure that's what he told us.
Probably.
And so we'll see if we take that walk down memory lane. But he's been mad about what he's seen and what he hasn't seen. So this seems to me to be just the next domino, because it clearly wasn't Robert Saleh. Joe Douglas certainly is part of the equation, but so is Aaron Rodgers. And you know what? There's other guys that bear blame, too. Sauce Gardner, for all of his talking and all of his talent, has not played well this year. There's plenty of blame to go around. But the moves are starting at the top. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get back to more of the football. Can you believe we're looking ahead to week 12? We've also got the newest college football playoff rankings. One major change, and it kind of makes me question the whole structure. But yes, we'll get to that. We had told you not to miss the big showdown in Boston. Couldn't miss that green court there at TD Garden. I forgot until I saw the green court. I think that's the whole point, Pete. They do these crazy color designs and color schemes on the courts to remind you that it's an NBA Cup game. Because otherwise, nobody would have any idea that it was happening.
Right.
So the court at the Garden, which has long been the beloved parquet. That's what I grew up with when I was in New England and the Celtics were my favorite team. Now it's this green squares. It's green like a frog. But the matchup is what was drawing your attention to the tube on TNT. Or if you were listening on the radio, either one. Cavaliers had started out the season 15-0. The Celtics had dropped a few games. But remember, last beat the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference semifinals. And boy, they were poised and ready and shooting the lights out in the first half.
Garland, stop and start, tries the right side, goes for the scoop shot, blocked by Horford, off the glass into the hands of Jason Tatum. Horford stayed with him the entire way. Tatum, stop and start, steps back on Niang, left side three, swish.
Man. That was nice.
Tatum moving to his left, he steps right into an open three, and the crowd will tell you he got another one. With it, he passes De'Aaron Fox and quickly regains the NBA scoring lead. Tatum driving on Niang, knocks him away, so he's all alone for a left side three at the buzzer. Sixth three of the night for Jason Tatum, and the Celtics have needed every one of them. Horford breaks free from the pack, floats it ahead to Tatum, steps to his right, now attacks baseline, Euro step, kick to the wing, open, Pritchard, three, got it!
And that was huge. That was a huge play.
Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on the Celtics radio network. They start out like a house on fire, and the Celtics build a 21-point lead in the third quarter, only to see the Cavaliers come roaring back and cut that deficit to two in the late stages. A bloody Donovan Mitchell heading to the free throw line has to make some free throws. Yeah, it got tight. It got uncomfortable for the Celtics after seeing that lead get chipped away and whittled down to just a single possession. And so they had to hold off the Cavaliers in those final few seconds.
Drew Holiday, pressure to the backcourt, gets it away safely to Jaylen Brown. That's the guy the Cavs want to foul. But Jaylen gets rid of it to Horford, who's all alone under the basket for the two-hand slam. Five-point game, down to 6 seconds to go. Donovan Mitchell into the front court, jumps in with three, bounces out, offensive rebound. Mobley, Jerome, putback is good, but it all comes too late. And the Celtics survive a furious comeback by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the second longest season opening win streak comes to an end.
They still have the best record in the NBA at 15-1. But yes, Sean Grandy, seeing the end of the Celtics, well, seeing the end of the Cavaliers against the Celtics in that perfect start to the season. Now, coming up in just a few minutes, we will talk to Chris Fedor, who's in Boston. He covers the Cavaliers and the NBA for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Also, occasionally a host on our Cleveland affiliate, 92.3 The Fan. Jason Tatum was 6-for-10 from beyond the arc, 33 points, a dozen rebounds, 7 assists. He's constantly flirting with triple doubles to start the season. What did they focus on during that Cavaliers comeback?
Temple, we just locked in on defense. We've been in that situation a million times where it's like, you know, it's time to win. It's time to lock in, you know, guard your yard, help each other on defense, get a stop, go down on offense and find out who we're trying to attack, where we need to put guys at and make the right play.
I thought we were physical the entire game. which I care more about throughout the regular season, is our physicality, our toughness. The details are the second most important thing, and we slipped a little bit of that in the third. But in the fourth, we picked up both of those things. But I thought we were extremely physical defensively, and I thought we were very poised and intentional on the offensive end, and I thought we made good reads.
Joe Mazzulla and Jason Tatum following the Celtics win. Donovan Mitchell with 35 points and 8 rebounds, but he goes just 3 of 11 from beyond the arc. So what can they take away from their first loss?
Just a test. That's just a big test. You know what I mean? Whether win, lose, or draw, it's just a test. And, you know, obviously you want to learn and through wins, you know what I mean? But we lost tonight, but there's a lot we can take away from good in the second half and a lot we can learn from in the first half to get better at.
We will talk to Chris Fedor in Boston after he covered this game, part of the NBA Cup, but really more about a gauge for these Cleveland Cavaliers at 15-1. A lot of fun to watch. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on our Facebook page, at Amy After Hours on Twix, and you can send your questions for Ask Amy. That's coming up in about 2.5 hours, so you've got some time to be creative. Let's go Thanksgiving theme here, producer Pete. So let's look like Thanksgiving, pre-holiday type of theme. Food. That means food. We're glad to have you with us. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours on the Infinity Sports Network.
Derek White for Jason Tatum. Deep from the right side against Niang. Return to White. He's just going to launch. It's a straightaway three, and it's good. Derek White is so locked in tonight. The rim looks huge to him.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Derek White finishes with 19 points in 42 minutes for the Celtics. They were initially shooting the lights out from downtown. They were asking Celtics after the game, did they recognize that the Cavaliers had started 15-0? Did they know?
Yeah, we knew. I think everybody knew that they were undefeated. And coming to our building, and also it's an NBA Cup game. We already lost one game, so it was a really big game in that aspect. So we were all aware.
Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown was all hands on deck to be able to hold off a furious rally by the Cavaliers after they were trailing by 21. They cut that deficit to just 2 points based on a huge third quarter, but not a lot of threes, actually. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You could send your questions for Ask Amy Anything, either of our social media sites. While you're there, you can still vote for TD of the Week as we wrap up a Touchdown Tuesday and focus on basketball. We're pleased to welcome Chris Fedor from Boston, covers the Cavs and the NBA for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Ultimately, in a game with a bunch of wild swings, Chris, what was the difference between these two?
I think the difference is that the Celtics did some things in the first half that the Cavs weren't fully prepared for, and the Celtics, their defensive strategy, took the Cavs' offense out of their rhythm. You know, the Cavs entered the game, Amy, with the number one offense in the NBA, and they just didn't look the part in the first half. And I think when you play against a team like the Celtics and you dig that kind of hole, and you're out of rhythm for that long of a stretch, it's just a little bit too much to ask to try and come back and erase that entire deficit. I think the Cavs deserve a ton of credit for the way that they fought. It would not have been fitting for it to end that kind of way, the streak to end that kind of way with a whimper, non-competitive against their biggest threat in the Eastern Conference, the team that is the reigning NBA champions. They've made some adjustments at the half, but by that time, it was too little too late against that caliber opponent.
Largest deficit was 21 points. So how did you see them fight, scratch, claw to the point at which it was at least a one-possession game?
It started with some adjustments that they made in the second half, Amy. They started really attacking mismatches after the Celtics switched everything on the defensive end of the floor. So they started hunting the kind of matchup that they wanted. They allowed Darius Garland to attack off the dribble, Donovan Mitchell to attack off the dribble. Evan Mobley was great in the third quarter. So I think they had a level of recognition of the things that the Celtics were doing defensively in the first half, and they made the adjustments that were necessary in the third quarter, and they had a 40-point third quarter, which is more like the Cavs than the 20-point first quarter that they had. I mean, that first quarter against Boston, Amy, that was their fourth lowest scoring quarter all season long. So that was just very uncharacteristic for them. But they made the adjustments that they needed to make in the second half. They found some matchups that they really liked, that they felt like they could exploit. I thought they were a little bit more physical on the defensive end of the floor in the second half as well, played with the requisite intensity that this kind of game called for, and they worked their way back into it. And the other thing is Donovan Mitchell was great in the second half. Mm-hmm. He wasn't as good at the start of the game, but he started to find some space. He started to find his rhythm, and he was great in the second half, and he almost willed them back.
If you didn't watch the game and you only looked at the stat sheet and saw the deficit in the number of threes, minus 12 in that category, the Celtics shooting the lights out, a lot of teams just fold up at that point. Even without the three, the Cavs were able to pull themselves back in and withstand that onslaught.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Amy, but it's something that I think that the Cavs are going to have to figure out moving forward in this particular matchup. Because if we go back to the Eastern Conference semifinals last year, the last time the Cavs actually lost a game over the last 6 months was to this same Boston team. And one of the things that Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla talked about following that series was that it just became a math equation. And the Cavs were so reliant on their inside game and so reliant on Evan Mobley. He was scoring inside, but the Celtics weren't all that worried about it because they believed that they were going to win the math equation. They were going to be able to shoot and take more threes and make more threes than the Cavs. So the Cavs talked about that coming into this game. Part of it is it's just a different roster construct. Evan Mobley and Jared Allen are going to play inside around the rim, not perimeter players the way that the Celtics are. So they're going to have to find a different kind of formula, I think, Amy, against this particular Boston team. To try and negate that math equation or flip it a little bit more favorable to the Cavs. 29 threes is not enough for a team like the Cavs that believe that they should be taking more threes. They have interior matchups that were favorable for them with both Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. But there's enough talent, there's enough three-point shooting on this team to hoist more than that. 29 is not a number that the Cavs are going to be comfortable with moving forward.
Chris Fedor is with us from Boston, covers the Cavs and the NBA in this big matchup, part of the NBA Cup, so that crazy green court. We grew up in New England. My mom definitely does not like it, but it lets you know that it's an NBA Cup game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So, Chris, the game from Darius Garland was a tough one, obviously. They also don't end up having Caris LeVert in this game. Without those two pieces, what are they missing?
Yeah, it's not just Caris LeVert either, Amy. It's four of their top 11 projected rotation players that they were without tonight against Boston. And that's part of the reason why the Cavs felt that they played well in this game against the Celtics, and they were proud of their fight, and they were proud of their effort, and they didn't really have their heads hung, and they didn't really have slumped shoulders because they looked at this and say, oh, wait a minute, we are missing four of our key guys here tonight. And we were right there with Boston, despite the fact that they buried us below an avalanche of threes. So there was like a feeling after the game from the Cavs of like, hey, we can match up with this team. We can probably beat this team if we play our game, if we don't get caught up in their style. When they didn't have Isaac Okoro, they didn't have Caris LeVert, they didn't have Dean Wade, they didn't have Max Strus. Like, those are four guys that theoretically give them a better fighting chance on the defensive end of the floor against the likes of Jason Tatum, Jrue Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown. The Cavs had to use a starting lineup that they haven't used all season long, putting Sam Merrill into that starting lineup. Like I said, they didn't have as much on the defensive end of the floor to match up with Boston's wings, and they lost a little bit of playmaking without Caris LeVert. Caris is somebody who historically has played well against the Celtics because stylistically he likes to get up and down. Stylistically, he likes to break the paint. Stylistically, he likes to hunt switches and take guys off the dribble. He's a really good ISO player. So not having those guys, yeah, the Cavs felt that tonight against the Celtics, just like the Celtics felt not having Kristaps Porzingis, because every time, you know, the Celtics went with Kita in the game, you know, the Cavs relentlessly attacked him. That was a matchup that they considered favorable. So neither team tonight is the team that they're probably going to be April, May, if these teams meet again. And I think you felt that on both sides of it.
Before the game, I saw this quote from Kenny Atkinson, which I thought was interesting. We want feedback. That was his answer to what he hoped to get out of this game in part. What does that mean?
I think it means even though they had won 15 straight games to start the season, they're still collecting their own data. What works, what doesn't work. And in this kind of matchup, right, it's one thing to see offensive success and all these different changes that they've implemented since Kenny arrived with their ball movement, with their style, with their principles. It's one thing to get that validation and see it work against Chicago, Charlotte, New Orleans. This is the Celtics, right? This is probably the biggest threat that the NBA has seen since the dynastic Golden State Warriors. Mm. Like, they are that level good against this particular team, a team that the Cavs have a ton of respect for, and they know how difficult this matchup is for them. They wanted to see, like, are they going to stick to those principles or are they going to revert to bad habits? What kinds of things can we do offensively in terms of lineups and combinations that are going to work? So it's just collecting all that kind of data and figuring out more things about themselves moving forward when they get into these types of matchups. Because the Cavs have said it, Amy, over and over and over again. There is a bigger picture in play. They are talking championship in Cleveland. It's something that President of Basketball Operations Kobe Altman said for the first time in the post-LeBron era. So there's a bigger picture in play here, and they're trying to improve internally as the season goes on, and they're trying to continue to ascend so they're at their best when springtime rolls around. And all these kinds of matchups against this caliber opponent, seeing what works, what doesn't work, what lineup combinations work, which ones don't, how much can we play Evan Mobley and Jared Allen together, all those different things are really, really informative for the Cavs moving forward.
It's like the Cavs version of AI. I like it, that type of information. Chris Fedor is with us from Boston, covers the Cavs and the NBA for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. How much talk was there about the 15-0 start, or even as the wins were piling up, about them not having lost a game?
Oh, man, they downplayed it as it was going on, as you would expect coaches and players to. But, like, Donovan Mitchell was fighting to not miss the game over the weekend against Charlotte because he didn't want that to be the one that they were going to lose. So the Cavs wanted to be a part of history, of course. If you're a competitor, if you have that within your grasp, or you feel like it's within your grasp, you want to continue to chase it. You want to be a part of that. You want to have that opportunity. It was meaningful to them. There's no doubt. Every player in that locker room knew the number 24, the record set by the Golden State Warriors. And I don't think it was a case, Amy, where they were looking ahead to the schedule and they were like, oh, man, if we're going to get to 25 and we're going to break the Warriors' record, that means we have to beat Boston twice, we have to beat Denver, and then the 25th win would be on the road against Miami, a place where we never win. Like, I don't think it got to that point, but they wanted these games. And they were trying to continue this winning streak for as long as they possibly could. And it was fun while it lasted, and they played really, really good basketball during that stretch. But the times that they said, you know, it's not on our mind, that was a complete and utter lie, because it was.
Kenny Atkinson has certainly implemented the new offense. We've talked about that. He's changed the way that these guys operate together on the court. But off the court, in the locker room, what does he bring to the table as a leader?
I think the thing that he has brought, Amy, is more of a looseness. And I think there's a recognition on his behalf. And it's something that maybe J.B. Bickerstaff didn't recognize as much, because he had to take them through the rebuild. He had to take them through the dark times. And he never really switched the mentality of, this is no longer a rebuilding team. Like, this is a team that is a legitimate contender. And I think sometimes he treated a team that they, in that locker room, thought they were good enough and believed they should have had, you know, big-time aspirations and expectations. At times, it felt like JV was kind of treating them like they were still going through that rebuild. But with a fresh set of eyes and a new perspective, Kenny has brought more of a looseness. And I think it's something that he learned from Golden State, being around Steve Kerr. You don't have to take everything so seriously. You can have fun. You can play music, right? You can do trivia nights, something that the Cavs have done. you can play two-hand touch to finish a practice with a football. Like all these different kinds of things to try and make it more of a fun environment. Because 82 games is a grind, and this schedule can wear on you. And you just have to break from the monotony of what the day-to-day can become in today's NBA. And there's a joy in that locker room. There's a looseness, like I said, in that locker room. It doesn't mean that they're not business-like, and it doesn't mean that they don't have high expectations, but there's just a different vibe around this team with Kenny coming from Golden State. There's a lot of Warriors influence both on and off the court when it comes to the Cavs.
And considering the Cavaliers-Warriors history, how are fans embracing this team and this new coach?
Oh my God, Amy, they love this team. the style is one that they've been calling for the last couple of years. They're less predictable on the offensive end of the floor. It's not so much reliance on the pick and roll. A lot of selflessness, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of ball movement, making the extra pass. It's not just Donovan carrying them to what was a 15-0 record coming into tonight's game against the Celtics. This is November. This is a football town in Cleveland.
Right.
This is supposed to be Browns season, right? There was a Sunday game that they played just recently against the Charlotte Hornets. Like, no offense to Charlotte, but that is a lottery-bound team that is not anywhere close to the Cavs level. And Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse was rocking because they have embraced this team. They have put their arms around this team, and it has kind of given a palate cleanser for the terrible Brown season that went off the rails a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, it made November basketball fun when it's usually not this level of entertaining. It gave fans something to turn to with the Browns being a disaster. So they're on board with this team. They believe in this team. And I think this team has given this city hope. Even if it's not this year, the future's still bright, and a championship in some major sport is possible.
Before I let you go, one last question about Donovan Mitchell, because he predates Kenny. This is early in his third year with the Cavaliers. How did he find a home there in Cleveland?
I think part of it, Amy, is like the kind of superstar he is. He's a selfless superstar. He's a low-maintenance superstar. There was this belief about Donovan that like he needed a big market, that he needed L.A., Miami, New York, or something like that. He became Donovan Mitchell, you know, one of the best players in the NBA in Utah, right? He became Donovan Mitchell with a signature shoe from Adidas in Utah. So I think Donovan understands that he wants to be the face of the NBA. When LeBron is gone, when KD is gone, when Steph is gone, and they're looking for the next American-born superstar in the NBA, he wants it to be him. He's on record saying that. But I think he understands it's not about market. It's about winning. And I think he saw a future here in Cleveland, and he saw a roster here in Cleveland that he felt like he could grow with. Part of the reason why he re-signed was because of Evan Mobley and the future of Evan Mobley. You've got this young guy that he's going to grow alongside. Kenny Atkinson has matched the minutes, basically, of Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley. Donovan has empowered him. Donovan has elevated him. And he saw last year in the Eastern Conference semifinals on a court against the Celtics, future Hall of Famers, multi-time champions, all-stars, Evan be one of the best players in that series. And he said, you know, I can help him get to the next level, and he can help me with my game, making it easier for me. So that, to me, is part of the reason why Donovan's such a good fit in Cleveland. All that stuff that isn't specific to Cleveland doesn't matter all that much to him. He just wants to hoop, and he just wants to win. And he fits the mentality of the city. He's embraced the city. He goes to high school basketball games.
Oh, I love that.
He puts on Guardians jerseys. He smacks the guitar down before Browns games. So he fits in really, really well, not just on this team, not just in this organization, but in the city as well.
Well, you win in Cleveland, and sports fans will never forget you. You will be immortalized on the shores of Lake Erie. Yeah. All right, so Chris Fedor, you can find him online, F-E-D-O-R. He covers the Cavs, the NBA for Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer. You can hear him on our Cleveland affiliate, 92.3, occasionally, though in season he is on the road. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes. I really appreciate it.
Amy, you got it. Anytime.
They're a great story. Kenny Atkinson is the right fit. And even though the Cavaliers lost their first game of the year tonight, they still do have championship aspirations. And that has got to be music to the ears of many Cleveland sports fans who are diehards. If you missed that conversation, well, it's always part of our podcast. Our guests get their own separate podcast link. So we share those every weekday morning, and then I usually do another round of sharing on social later in the afternoon at Amy After Hours, our Facebook page, to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And AM is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance. Aaron Rodgers to the bench. That's apparently what owner Woody Johnson wanted to do after the Broncos' loss left the Jets at 2-2. Athletic reporting Johnson wanted Tyrod Taylor to replace Rodgers, then fired Robert Saleh 1 week later after a loss in London to the Vikings left the team at 2-3. Now he's shown the door to his GM and Joe Douglas. Is Douglas gone? Just shy of 6 years in charge. Won 30 out of 94 games. Zero playoff appearances. Failed to even have a winning season, as we'll now also see where Rodgers goes from here as well. Oregon remains on top. Newest college football rankings, followed by Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, and Indiana, as the top five remain unchanged. BYU dropped down to 14. They would be the 12th seed in the current format. Fifth highest rated conference champion. Boise State sits at 12. They would be your 4 seed, though, with a first-round bye. NBA Cavs unable to keep that magic carpet ride going to begin the season.
Donovan Mitchell into the front court, jumps in with three, bounces out, offensive rebound. Mobley, Jerome, putback is good, but it all comes too late. And the Celtics survive a furious comeback by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the second longest season opening win streak comes to an end.
120 to 117 as the Celtics hand the Cavs their first loss on the season. Jason Tatum, 33 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. Call courtesy of the Celtics Radio Network. Rest of scores, Mavericks dismiss the Pelicans 132-91. Nuggets roll the Grizzlies 122-100 as Russell Westbrook, his 200th career triple-double. Spurs top the Thunder 110-104. Nets up in the Hornets 116-115 as they rallied from 17 points down. College hoops top-ranked Kansas routed UNC Wilmington 84-66. UConn dominated East Texas A&M 81-46. 15th-ranked Marquette, too much for number 6 Purdue 76-58. Kentucky overwhelmed Lipscomb 97-68. Cincinnati erased Northern Kentucky 76-60, and Florida had no problems with Florida A&M 84-60. College football, Miami of Ohio down Northern Illinois 20-9. Central Michigan withstood Western Michigan 16-14. And Akron, they rolled Kent State 38-17. And from baseball, Brewers Pat Murphy, Cleveland Stephen Vogt, they were named your managers of the year. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, sports fans, it's Jim Rome. Check us out 24/7 on your local affiliate or the Odyssey app.
It's a Touchdown Tuesday on After Hours.
Firing for the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Takes it himself to the pylon. Touchdown!
1 man to beat 10. He's gone.
They throw in the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Beat a guy miss. He's inside the 5. He's to the 3-2-1. Touch the center salting into the end zone. Touchdown!
To cast your vote for the TD of the week, give us a call at 855-212-4227. The Tennessee Titans.
Levis from his end zone, firing deep downfield for Westbrook. Akide got it! 40, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10, 5, end zone! Touchdown, Titans! The longest touchdown pass of the year in the National Yes!
The Detroit Lions.
On second down, Goff takes the direct snap, fakes the give, sets in the pocket, steps up, looks, throws, it is complete.
There goes Jamo right side. He's got the angle to the end zone. 25-20, 15-10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Jamo flies into the end zone, and the Lions extend their lead. Once he catches that ball, once he's got the angle, you're dead and you don't even know it. J-Mo on his way to the end zone, and the Lions now sitting on 34 points. They open the second half with a J-Mo bolt of lightning.
The Seattle Seahawks.
Geno gets him back to the line of scrimmage, 22-21, gets the snap, looks, steps up, gonna run, 10-5, Geno, touchdown, Seahawks, holy catfish, Geno Smith. Runs left side, can't find anybody open from 13 out, 12 seconds left, and the Seahawks take the lead, 19-17. Are you kidding me?
The Buffalo Bills.
Allen going to step up in the pocket. Now he's going to take it and run, and he's got the first down and more. 10, 5, and muscles his way into the end zone for an unbelievable 26-yard touchdown run. Are you kidding me?
All such delicious candidates for TD of the week as we wrap up a Touchdown Tuesday, week 11, and usher in a wacky Wednesday. Let's hope. Let's hope it's wacky enough to bring us entertainment. It certainly is the hump show, which means you have the chance. 1 hour left to vote for the TD of the week. And it was hard to narrow it down. As good as these candidates are, having seven different touchdowns in their first seven drives for the Lions. But as you hear with Dan Miller on their radio network, Jameson Williams with a 64-yarder through traffic. Just a bolt of lightning, as Dan Miller said. But what a different element he adds to the offense, which is why they keep him around despite some of the off-field challenges and off-field choices and poor decisions that he's made, and of course suspensions as well. You've also got the Geno Smith touchdown run with 12 seconds to go. Steve Rabel, holy catfish, on the Seahawks radio network as they're able to upend the Niners in the Bay Area. The longest touchdown pass of the season, Will Levis to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Maybe the only highlight for the Titans in their game this weekend. However, I will say that having that moment maybe gives them a jolt of confidence. Tennessee, one of those teams that I've heard people talk about, they're going to change their coach again, which I think is a bad idea. They're definitely in rebuilding mode. But one of those kinds of moments at least gives you something to look back on. And right now, they can wear it with a badge of honor. Longest touchdown pass of the season and in the NFL. And then finally, Buffalo, Josh Allen against the Chiefs. Well, he's got a lot of wins, and the Bills have a lot of wins against the Chiefs in the regular season in his tenure. This one knocked them from the ranks of the undefeated. His 26-yard touchdown run, taking contact, bouncing off defenders, driving through to the end zone, and Chris Brown with the call on Bills radio. So you've got an hour left to vote at Amy Lawrence. No, that's not what it is. I don't know where I got that from. At A-Law Radio, at Amy After Hours, and then our Facebook page is After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It is the hump show, which means generally my brain is a little bit of mush. Hope you enjoyed the conversation about Cavaliers and Celtics. We're going to get back to some of the other games in the NBA. So this part of the NBA Cup and the Tuesday crazy courts that you see all around the league. 855-212-4227. We can talk about hoops, but also, did you hear the rumor about the Dallas Cowboys and their head coaching job? Jerry Jones back in his familiar spot on our Dallas affiliate. We'll hear from the owner of the Cowboys straight ahead. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Holy catfish!